Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hello, it's Healthy Gut Girl. This is Kitty Martone. I am coming to you live from deep inside your large intestine here at Stuff Your Doctor Should Know. And I make so many friends in your large intestine. And I've mentioned to you a couple of podcasts ago about my new friend, Constantine. You know, the internet is so cool for a lot of reasons. It can also be a big fat pain in the butt, but it is so cool. Just because, you know, Constantine is this 23-year-old kid. I think he's 23. He lives in Toronto. He got locked down for COVID, so couldn't go back to university. He's studying law. And he just, you know, has this passion for health and has gone down the rabbit hole of, you know, trying to fix his own imbalances and came upon all of this Ray Peet, Georgie Dinkoff, Danny Roddy community that I knew about but wasn't really invested in any way. As you know, there's so much health information and so many different subsets of communities out there that, you know, delve into everything from the metabolic community to the root cause protocol community to the microbiome community. You know, there's just so many subsets of wellness and health. And you can go down each one scientifically, each rabbit hole scientifically. But anyway, I hadn't really delved into the whole Ray Peet thing much, but I knew about him because he's really probably, I would say, like the grandfather of progesterone. He and Katarina Dalton, Dr. Dalton, and maybe Dr. John Lee as well. And so I've known about them, but I just hadn't really dug deep. And so we became friends because he had interest in the mandates. He was protesting the mandates and all the stuff going on in Canada, the horrific tyranny that continues to go on. And so I had been posting about the trucker freedom convoys and stuff, and we found each other that way. And we became friends. I mean, who knew? And he has just been such a help, so enlightening, and turning me on to all kinds of new information. I invited him into the Estrogen Dominance Support Group on Facebook, and now he's a moderator there. So well spoken and educated and really understands the science behind hormones. And it's very cool. And he's a health coach, and he's just been doing great. But he has kind of egged me on to invite these other guests that are outside of my normal. Most of the guests that come to me through different types of publicists and stuff like that. They reach out to me, their agents reach out to me or whatever. But I rarely reach out to other people unless I'm really, you know, really, really interested. And Constantine has kind of encouraged me to reach out to people like Georgie Dinkoff. And surprisingly, they have been really game to come on the show. So I've got a lineup over the next several weeks of some awesome guests, starting with my last couple of guests ago, which was Georgie Dinkoff. And then I have some other guests coming up soon that are really awesome. Very excited about them. And then Constantine, as I promised, is our guest today. And he's going to take us down the thyroid rabbit hole. And we kind of go in different directions. It's really cool. He's really good at what he's doing here. I think he found his niche. I don't know if the law is going to be for him. I think he needs to continue to help educate, be a health educator. So anyway, enjoy. I hope you love it as much as I do. And we'll talk to you on the backside. So all their stuff looks pretty powerful and good.
Yeah, theanine is fantastic. It's antihistamine, anti-anxiety, anti-serotonin. It's just great. It's a great amino acid for sure.
My new protocol is looking really funny. It's got like aspirin and Pepcid AC and all kinds of stuff. Yeah. I still haven't taken my oxdeal, my methionine.
Methylene blue, yeah.
Methylene blue, yeah.
Think it's gonna be like crazy. Like you'll probably feel nothing. So don't be scared of it.
Right. Because
one drop is nothing.
Cool. I mean, that's how I kind of feel about most of the things that are good that I take, like you don't feel them right away, you know? And that's probably a good thing.
Well, okay, there are some things that you definitely feel like there's Georgie sells a very strong antihistamine that's it's antihistamine, anticholinergic, and anti-serotonin. So it's like the three best things a repeat person can want other than anti-estrogen. But Georgie and Ray say that estrogen does a lot of its harm through different branches, and one branch is through histamine and one is through acetylcholine. So when people say like, oh, I have histamine issues, you know, estrogen, histamine is one of the one of the arms of estrogen's, you know, terror. So Georgie definitely thinks anything antihistamine and anticholinergic is anti-estrogen. But anyway, the point is they love that cyproheptadine. It's what he sells.
And is that the name of the product?
Yeah. And it knocks you out. Like I take it if I have dairy by accident and I'm like, oh no, I don't want to need an EpiPen or something. I take it and it knocks me out. Like
wow.
It's, yeah. And people take it for like the anti-serotonin thing, but it's not very useful because in our mind, in Ray Pete world, serotonin makes you docile and obedient in like a really bad way. So you want to take anti-serotonin chemicals to not be docile, but it doesn't really matter if you're not docile yet totally sleepy and knocked out. Like you want to be, because when I would go protesting in Toronto, I mean, I wasn't going to take cyproheptadine. It would be great because you want low serotonin if you're fighting against the government, but you don't want to be sleeping. So so caffeine's better for that because caffeine is anti-serotonin, but it also wakes you up. Cyproheptadine, you'd be like, no more mandates. Like it's not the thing to do.
Well, then you would take the how do you say it? The
Oxidil.
If you're going to go protesting. Got it. All right.
And vitamin K2 and yeah, lots of things.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I love it. So, you know, one of the things that I noticed since you brought up histamine, women who have miscarriages, abortions, even the Plan B pill, birth, live births, it really does a number on their on their hormones. And I think what happens is because it's such a large output of progesterone, and because we know progesterone is being used for so many other things, that it makes a woman really deficient right away. And then estrogen just completely takes over at that time. And so I noticed that when I miscarried, I don't know how many years ago it was now, the first time. Afterwards, I had immediately following, I started to get these light seizures, which were like catamenial epilepsy, which is, you know, spikes in estrogen and massive crashes in progesterone. And I had hives. Like it was crazy. All of a sudden, I would get hives no matter what. I would get nervous. I would have a cup of coffee. Anything that raised my adrenaline at all, I would just burst out into hives all over my legs. I mean, I would be scratching until they were bleeding. And I never knew that it was because of the estrogen. I thought it was just a random thing, unconnected to what was going on in my life. And I see this a lot with women who are like, you know, I had a miscarriage or I just had a baby or whatever. And, or I took Plan B and now I'm just ruined. I've got the worst histamine responses. So it's really interesting to hear you make that connection between saying histamine is an arm of estrogen. Like it's one of it's part of its arsenal, isn't it?
Yeah. And acetylcholine though, people that talk about acetylcholine act like it's only good. But it can be quite harmful. Like for example, it's involved in asthma. It's involved in feeling nauseous. It's involved in OCD really heavily. And it's involved in fear learning. So, you know, if you had a bad experience parallel parking and you're going to try to parallel park again and you feel that terrible fear and you don't want to parallel park, I think that's acetylcholine, because you want to learn, you know, through your experiences. You want to know that was scary, so I shouldn't do that. And mm-hmm. if you have a bad time doing something and you feel your heartbeats racing just thinking about, oh, I don't want to go to that store because I'll have to park the car.
Uh-huh.
To me, that's acetylcholine. So it's, people talk, oh, acetylcholine helps you learn. Well, it's fear learning. Like it's
right.
It's like a
warning. It's your body's way of creating a red flag or a warning on your dashboard, like beep, beep, beep.
So you it's imprinted on you. You remember the traumatic, scary things the most, right? Well, you know, okay, sure. You remember things that scare you, definitely.
Yeah.
Like parking. And the thing like with the
parking. That hasn't happened with me yet, and destroying my husband's rims of his truck when I parallel park, but that's another story. So, yeah.
But acetylcholine, the problem is, though, it's not just harmful like estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
It's harmful, but people think it's the best neurotransmitter there is, and they're always trying to treat Alzheimer's of the acetylcholine, but it's they fail. They fail big time. So, I'm sure Georgie would, if someone had Alzheimer's, he'd have, or dementia, whatever, he would have so many things to add, but one of them would be cyproheptadine, partly because of the anticholinergic, but people are taking cholinergic drugs for Alzheimer's, which is wrong. You shouldn't do that.
So let's just back up for a second. So I was talking about histamine and then you jumped to acetylcholine. What's the connection there? Why did you jump to acetylcholine?
Yeah, because I was saying that histamine is one of the arms that estrogen has its harm from. And another arm would be acetylcholine.
Got it.
So and this is what George Dinkoff says. Mm-hmm. And he told me this on Twitter, actually, because I was saying, oh, I'm trying to figure out asthma. And from what I can tell, what's involved in asthma heavily is, in terms of hormones and neurotransmitters, is serotonin, acetylcholine, estrogen, and histamine. And he said, well, obviously, acetylcholine and histamine with estrogen, because acetylcholine and histamine are how estrogen is harmful. Like, that's how estrogen uses its, you know, its harm. So
right
it's how it follows through on the harm. So we said anything that's anticholinergic, antihistamine, is also anti-estrogen. That's what he was saying, and that's why the antihistamines are anti-estrogen in his mind.
So we're gonna play this game here, which I like to do, which is just like I am just going to pretend like I absolutely know nothing and I'm trying to understand everything so we can simplify everything. What is acetylcholine and phosphatidylcholine and other things with the word choline in it have anything to do with each other besides sharing the end of the word, which is choline?
Well, okay. Choline is an actual nutrient and it's needed for many things. So it's needed for liver health. It's needed to create bile. Mm-hmm. So choline and cholesterol, like other things are needed to make bile, and bile is needed to emulsify fats in the small intestine so you can actually digest the fats. And that's important because you need bile to absorb fat soluble vitamins. So if you're taking vitamin E and you're not producing enough bile, mm-hmm. you're not going to be absorbing vitamin E or vitamin A or any fat soluble thing. So choline is important because of that reason. It's important for the brain too and stuff like that.
Okay.
But acetylcholine is a neurotransmitter, and it's part of the parasympathetic nervous system, I believe. I think it's one of the main neurotransmitters for parasympathetic. And parasympathetic is like the rest and digest kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But people talk about it for acetylcholine is what helps you focus and stuff. But like I was saying, it is involved in learning, but and you definitely want some acetylcholine, but too much acetylcholine makes you have OCD. So like, I'd say nail biting, that person would probably have high levels of glutamate, which is a, you know, excitatory,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if it's a neurotransmitter, but it is an amino acid, like glutamic acid.
It's like MSG. It's like an excitotoxin, right?
Yeah, excitotoxin, excitatory. And you know, Ray Pete says estrogen is an excitotoxin as well. And he says that's why some women like estrogen, because it makes them feel like a brain buzz, but he says it's actually killing your brain cells.
Wow.
So he's like, that's one of the main reasons he's saying, and he has an article on raypete.com. It's I think estrogen and memory or something mm-hmm. like that. And in his books, he explains it well. So anyway, glutamate, glutamate's bad for having too much because of that excitotoxic effect. Estrogen's the same. Acetylcholine can be the same if there's too much. But people smoke tobacco, like cigars, because it will act like acetylcholine and they'll feel like I'm more dialed in right now, right? Nicotine, I think, is a cholinergic, so it makes you more dialed in, more focused, but it could lead to fear learning, like I was saying, the parking and not just brain stuff. Acetylcholine is involved in many bad things when it's too much, and that's like nausea. If you have too much acetylcholine, you'll have too much fluid production, mucus production. So if you have lots of mucusy sinuses or ears or like so much saliva, that's acetylcholine. And why? Because I said acetylcholine is parasympathetic. It's rest and digest. Mm-hmm. So it's promoting the production of saliva and different mucuses. So if you feel like you're really mucusy, acetylcholine's involved. It's involved in asthma. It's involved in nausea. It's involved in OCD, right? So
it makes me think of cystic fibrosis and things like that, where people are super, super mucusy and, you know, the buildup of phlegm is just continuous and ongoing. But it also makes me think of like, when I was a little girl, I was always nauseous and I was always getting car sick. And I always had like tics, like you're saying about chewing gum or about like, you know, did you say chewing gum?
Chewing your fingernails,
but also chewing gum, you know, like people that get those extreme strange things like that show My Strange Habit or whatever it's called, where people like are pulling their hair out or they're eating that, you know, pica, that weird disorder called pica, where people eat like chips of paint and they eat their own hair. And it just like, it's an extreme of these chemicals in the body that have just gone a little too far in one direction. Right. And
I definitely want to add to that because I forget the scientific name for it, but there is a name for skin picking. it's something people will pick their skin, maybe around their fingers or somewhere else. And it gets bad. Like they'll be bloody. Right. And that is from acetylcholine. That is from acetylcholine.
That makes me think of all of those types of things where I thought they were mostly adrenal generated, like adrenaline and, you know, those kinds of like,
it could be involved. Adrenaline could be involved.
Norepinephrine and epinephrine. And because I mean, I'm a gum chewer definitely. And, you know, a foot tapper and like, I've always got to be doing something. And then when I was really kind of very out of balance, I also used to crave super crunchy things. Like a lot of people will chew on ice or they'll like, I had this carrot addiction so much so that my hands turned orange, like for real, like palms of my hands were orange. And Morley Robbins said that I was so anemic, quote unquote, I was trying to turn the vitamin A in the carrots into vitamin A retinol, which I couldn't do. And that causes all these weird things like, you know, wanting crunchy things or whatever. But it's fascinating because you wonder, how does someone get a weird habit like that, like picking their skin till they bleed, or OCD, you know, washing their hands until they're bleeding or whatever.
And if people that are watching know me, they'll be like, why are you talking about that? Like, if it's weird, you do that. And I do do some of these things.
I was going to ask you, do you have a fear of parallel parking?
No, not parallel parking, but
picking your fingers and stuff.
Yeah, I it's hard for me to stop biting my nails, and I'm convinced that's from high acetylcholine. And guess what? One of the main ways, not main ways, but something that will promote too much acetylcholine is a vitamin A deficiency, actually.
Really? Makes so much sense.
Yeah. And I opened up my notes on acetylcholine because it was interesting. We're talking about it. And you'd be interested to see some. One of them is it causes cramps. So,
like what kind of cramps?
Like period cramps, but any kind of cramp. Yeah, so cramps, it makes your eyes really blurry. Like it's what promotes yawning. So if you're yawning way too much, you'll notice you yawn and your eyes are, if they're filled with water, that's from acetylcholine. I'm not saying that's bad, but if you feel like you're yawning all the time and you always have blurry, watery eyes.
Yeah, that's Charlie.
It contributes to epilepsy, nausea, like I said.
Okay, so tell me, what do you do besides get your vitamin A retinol in?
It's also involved with flushing and excessive sweating. So like surface body temperature.
right.
And this last thing I'll say about the symptoms, but because there's so many, like I said, asthma, it's so many, but one of them is actually, it could be the reason why someone has a decreased heart rate. Like if someone is like at 57, 62, Acetylcholine lowers the heart rate. It's a parasympathetic rest digest neurotransmitter. So if it's very high, your low heart rate, your mucusy in your nose, you're producing saliva, you're yawning, you have watery eyes. It's like, it's weird because it's all those things I just mentioned, yawning and stuff. You think that's a tired person, but it's also involved in excitatory brain learning OCD thing.
So
it's
because when you say parasympathetic, I'm sure a lot of listeners are going, wait a minute, that sounds like a good thing. But as you and I have been encountering quite a bit in our studies and stuff, is that sometimes just because something you think, like you hear the word antioxidant and you go, yeah, I need lots more is better of that. And then you go, well, not really. You have to find this harmony, this place where it's like a balance of it, right?
Yeah. I will say though, people could have too much acetylcholine at a low level, but if you have way too much acetylcholine, that's from pesticide poisoning. That's the main. Geez. Yeah. Another so if you have any pesticide residue somehow, mm-hmm. that'll cause you to be way too cholinergic. So that's like an actual, that's like, it has nothing to do with your diet. That's like walk well, through a puff of, well, sure you can eat, but I mean, it's not like the food part. It's not like, oh, it's a vitamin deficiency. It's because of chemicals, like chemicals, pesticides, really bad for acetylcholine. But if you're a normal, within the normal range, but you have high acetylcholine and you have OCD and nausea and all these, but nausea is mostly serotonin. I don't want to imply that acetylcholine is the only thing involved with nausea. People mm-hmm. take Gravol, and that's an antihistamine and anti-serotonin.
What just do they take?
Gravol. Do you not have Gravol? Yeah. Okay. It's basically Benadryl. It's the same drug, essentially, like different Dantrolene. And it's anti-cholinergic. It's antihistamine and anti-serotonin, all three of which are involved in nausea. Histamine's also involved in nausea. But
wow, this is so fascinating and brand new to me.
Yeah, well, because I think it's not the highest level of fraud. The highest level of fraud is saying serotonin is the happy neurotransmitter. That's wrong. That's fraud. Saying omega-3 fish oil is good for you. That's fraud. This acetylcholine thing is like a lower level because it's not like everyone knows about it.
Right.
Yeah. There are people like, oh, you got to increase your acetylcholine to study for tests and stuff. And I just don't think it's something to randomly go increase, especially if you're already dealing with too much. You know, if you're biting your nails and doing other weird OCD things, knocking on wood constantly, that, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yawning like crazy throughout the day. Like you probably have too much acetylcholine. So.
Interesting. Okay. Well, so you just picked a little hornet's nest there and walked right by it and didn't say anything. I don't even know if we should go there, but you just said a huge disinformation fraud is the omega-3s.
Yeah.
Before we move on to what I really wanted to talk about, can you just say something about that? Because you just poked a hornet's nest and my listeners are going, wait a minute. What?
Yeah. We should definitely have another episode dedicated to omega-3. And I'm just going to say, you know, I'm definitely not the best person to talk about omega-3s, but I will tell people a great place to start is to read Ray Peet's articles. He has 10 that are talking about omega-6 and 3. The best one is the Great Fish Oil Experiment.
Well, we're going to save and put a pin in this for our next episode because there's a lot to chat about and argue about in that.
Yeah.
So we'll do that. But let's back up just a little bit and talk about the histamine, the estrogen, and let's talk about how the thyroid plays in to that conversation. So let's just begin as if, you know, my listeners didn't know anything about thyroid except maybe T3 and that their doctor said their T3 is fine and they don't need to worry about it. Or what I've been saying for years, which is if you have thyroid imbalance, work on your gut, which is true, but I'm leaving out a lot of the picture and it's because I've been ignorant to the whole picture. So tell us about the thyroid.
Yeah. So first, a lot of what I'm going to say is my opinion based on reading the work and listening to people like Ray Peet, Kyle Mamounis, Chris Masterjohn, they're all PhDs. And then Georgie Dinkoff, Danny Roddy, these people. Mm-hmm. So you know, they have all the credit and I don't speak for any of them. This is just my, you know, my understanding of what I've read from those people. So anyway, right. in my understanding, when I'm saying thyroid function, or when I read them say thyroid function, mm-hmm. it, especially Dr. Ray Pete, it's not the thyroid gland. That is one part of it. And it's actually a small part of it. So your thyroid gland will produce T4, which is an inactive thyroid hormone, and a little bit of T3 in relation to the T4. And T3 is the active thyroid hormone. Now, you want your body to be utilizing thyroid hormones. So what happens is you want your thyroid to function well. And most people, their thyroid gland literally is functioning well. But the issue is we need our liver to convert most of the T4 into T3. That's where most of our T3 comes from the conversion in the liver. And there's so many things that can happen between step one, which is thyroid gland producing hormones, to step, you know, two, which is the liver converting. And then step three, I guess, would be your body, every cell in your body utilizing these, the active thyroid hormone, T3. So much could happen between thyroid gland and liver that's when I talk about, oh, you need to improve your thyroid function. In my mind, I'm always thinking your thyroid gland's probably fine unless you're eating raw leaves like kale or raw broccoli all the time, or beans. Like, and I mean all the time, all day, because yeah, your thyroid gland needs tyrosine and iodine to make the hormones, because T4 is tyrosine with 4 iodines, and T3 is tyrosine with 3 iodines. So sure, if you mess with your iodine by eating these goitrogens, which is kale, broccoli, beans, like black beans especially, then yeah, sure, maybe your thyroid gland is in trouble, but most people don't need more iodine. And supplements iodine could actually be harmful for thyroid function, which a lot of people don't realize. So I don't think you should supplement iodine, but you know, maybe someone
has to. Because there's a lot of people out there who seem to think that iodine is a huge deficiency.
Yeah, I'd say definitely not. And you know, part of this is from the book, Hypothyroidism, the Unsuspected Illness. We do learn about some people generally have an issue with their thyroid gland. Maybe they were in a goiter belt, so they're living high up on a mountain usually. So Austria had lots of goiter belts, and maybe some places like Colorado, Montana, like high up in the mountains, you might have less iodine in the soil kind of thing. But they've iodized our food for so long now. Our grain is iodized. If you're making bread, our salt is iodized, and iodine is in lots of food. And even if you live in a goiter belt, if you eat anything from outside of your local place, you're getting iodine. Potatoes have iodine, milk, eggs, and then all seafood like shellfish. So I never start with, you probably have an iodine deficiency. Like, that's almost never going to be the case unless they eat raw kale every day or something like that every day.
Yeah, which a lot of people do have kale smoothies every single day. And it's like,
yeah. Okay. Then in that case, I wouldn't say add iodine. I'd say stop having the raw kale smoothies. But,
right.
But you can eat cooked kale though. That's mm-hmm. much better than raw. But mm-hmm. anyway, so my point is, it's most likely 80% of the chance, I'm going to say 80% of the time, it's not your thyroid gland, but it could be. But anyway, moving on from that, because it's not that important, right? Mm-hmm. Just assume your thyroid gland's functioning well. You want your liver to produce, you to convert, and lots of issues can happen there. And we can talk about what's needed, because mm-hmm. the issue could be you're not giving yourself what you need. The other issue could be you're doing something that's literally blocking the conversion. So we can get into that, but someone might not know why they should care. So I'll try to quickly in a simple way explain why you should care. If you have good thyroid function, so by that, again, I mean metabolic rate, you're producing energy, you have lots of good conversion of T4 to T3. A good way to test this is your pulse and temperature. So if your pulse and temperature are at good range, that's how you tell, among other things, but that's the most important. And I'll just say this, at that stage, when you have a good pulse and temp, that means your thyroid function's functioning well. So why do we care? Why do we need to be hot? You know, 37 degrees. Why do we need to have a good temple? Why does that matter? When your thyroid function is good and your pulse and temp are good, everything in your body is functioning as it should. And then you can take on any issue you'll face with a perfectly functioning body. So for example, I'll use digestion as an example, because it's a really good one. Because there's so many issues along the digestion chain where something could go wrong, and someone could say, oh, I have low stomach acid, so I need to take betaine hydrochloride, or, oh, I'm not producing enough digestive enzyme, so I should take a digestive enzyme, or, you know, my gut motility is slow, so I need to take a gut motility herb, or I'm constipated, so I need to take a laxative, or I have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, so I need an antibiotic, or, you know, monolaurin or something like that. Well, all of that can be true. Like, those are, I don't have anything wrong with any of those supplements, but you only need them because your body isn't functioning correctly. So when your thyroid function is good, your metabolic rate is good, your energy production is good, your body is functioning as it should. So you chew food and you're producing enough saliva with the stuff saliva needs to already start breaking down the food in your mouth as you're chewing it. So you've already, let's just take a grape as an example. So you've already started breaking down the grape with your healthy saliva production. It goes down the esophagus, it goes to your stomach, and you are producing enough stomach acid. A lot of people say, oh, you need salt for stomach acid. Yeah, you need lots of things for stomach acid, but hypothyroid people, low metabolic people, have low stomach acid. You need that thyroid function, which again, is not, to clarify, is not just the gland. You need that thyroid function to produce the stomach acid. So, you know, if you're not producing enough stomach acid, then especially for protein, let's say you're not digesting the protein enough in the stomach, like it's not breaking down because the stomach acid is not ideal. So anyway, this grape goes to your stomach. You want it to have good stomach acid. It goes to the small intestine. You have produced and unloaded lots of great digestive enzymes like amylase for starch and whatever, protease for protein, and it's going to help you break down the food and take in the nutrients, all these things. So you need good thyroid function, have good blood flow to go to the small intestine. You need the thyroid function to produce the digestive enzymes in abundance, so you're actually breaking down the food. And you need gut motility to be quick, because the last thing you want is to have undigested food in your small intestine sitting there. That's the best way to get small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. So you might feel bloated, you might have indigestion, you might have heartburn. Well, all of these, you know, people will say, what do I do for XYZ? What do I do for heartburn? Well, you're always going to be fighting one battle on different fronts with your thyroid function low, because let's say your thyroid function is good at this stage. You have all the digestive enzymes, you have good blood flow in the intestine, you're absorbing all these nutrients like chromium from the grapes, whatever, minerals. And then whatever's left of the grape, the indigestible fiber, your small intestine is moving quick. The gut motility is at a speed it should be, and you get it to the colon. So now what's left? You have some substance in the colon, and it's the substance that should be there. There's not, you know, the small intestine did its job, the stomach acid did its job, the saliva did its job. So you're not leaving like this undigested piece of food in the colon, because if you ate a bunch of grapes or meat or something and one of these steps of your digestion wasn't perfect, there would be too much substance there that isn't meant to be in the colon. It's, you know, you're supposed to have taken the nutrients, you're supposed to have taken all these things, only there should be like fiber and other stuff left. So then in the colon, you should have bacteria in the colon, and maybe you feed a bit, but you shouldn't feed it too much. The gut motility should be quick, and you should go to the washroom. You shouldn't be constipated, because even if something stays in the colon and let's say the small intestine was good, if something's staying in the colon, not leaving, so you're constipated, whatever, you'll get bloated there too, because if bacteria proliferates, if you have bacterial overgrowth, you're feeding it too much with too much food in the colon where it should have been broken down more prior. The bacteria will grow so much, it'll start climbing into your small intestine. Then you'll have the bloating, you'll have the gas, you'll have the stomach upset, the indigestion, heartburn, like all these issues. All of these, from constipation to bloating, whatever, could be solved not by digestive enzyme supplements or gut motility supplements, but by having your body function as it should. You produce things like enzymes, you do the gut motility. All these things require energy production. And energy production, you know, there's lots of stuff to go into it, but at the end of the day, you know you are lacking if you take your pulse and temp at the correct times, and we could talk about that. And if they're not ideal, if you're cold, like you're 36.2 degrees Celsius and your pulse is low, you can assume you're not functioning as you should. You don't have good stomach acid. You don't have good gut motility. And that's why some of the main, because I work with people and a lot of the questions I'll ask them to start off is, do you have bloating? Do you have constipation? Do you have indigestion? Do you have heartburn, right? And usually they have at least one. And the issue isn't they need a laxative, or, you know, even though like cascara as a herb for laxative is great, but that's not the issue. The issue is most likely a thyroid hormone deficiency. So that's why I want to explain to people that you might say, why do I care about my metabolic function, my thyroid function? Well, because your body needs that to function optimally. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have good thyroid function, you're still going to function, just not optimally. And other quick symptoms that I like to say that are, you know, purely like subject, like actual symptoms instead of like, oh, your pulse and temp. I mentioned all the digestion ones, like constipation. A key one is frequent headaches. That's, or migraines. That's a very frequent one. And a lot of women will say, oh, I have a headache, right? That could be from low thyroid function. Infections, frequent infections are definitely low thyroid. And the specific one is sinus, actually. And there's reasons for that, why it's more so a sinus is definitely a huge indication of low thyroid, but all infections would be. If you're frequently getting the cold, you probably aren't metabolically, you know, there. But mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's cold hands and feet and nose. And there's many others, but basically, if you have an issue with your body, it's most likely at least indirectly related to not optimal metabolic rate. So That's why they should care.
Right.
Hey, everyone. I wanted to introduce Ona's new ultra-concentrated CBD progesterone cream. It's 5% CBD and 3% progesterone for relief of stress, anxiety, minor aches and pains in your muscles and joints. It is U.S.-sourced, produced, and naturally derived. It's organically grown. And right now, we are doing a special because this particular strength of CBD on the market, which is THC-free, normally goes for about $120 for 2 ounces. So we are doing $60 as an introductory offer. And the reason I developed it was because this particular combination with the CBD helps to downregulate cortisol while it helps you to take advantage of the progesterone benefits. The link is in the show notes, or you can go to us.onasnatural.com.
So in one of my last podcasts with Morley Robbins, we were talking about thyroid, and he said, so many people think that thyroid runs the body, and it just does not run the thyroid. I mean, it does not run the body. But what you just described made it sound like it kind of does run the body. So what do you say about that?
Yeah, you know, I did listen to that episode, and I don't want to misquote him, but I think he said something like, to my memory, he said something like, oh, everyone's talking about thyroid, but the gland mainly produces T4, and your liver needs to produce, you know, convert it to T3. And for that, you need copper. Like, I think he said something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I'd say, sure, that's not wrong. There's many things that are required for the T4 to mm-hmm. be turned into T3 in the liver. So we can start with what he was going on about, which is copper. So if I had to make some general points on what you need to convert T4 to T3, number one, we can start, I'm not saying this is the most important one, but we can start with minerals. Copper is one of the minerals, but so is selenium. Like, and so are other minerals. So what I would say is make sure you're eating a diet that's mineral rich. So that includes, you know, shellfish are great because they have all these, you know, trace minerals like copper and selenium, or, you know, like any mineral that's not the electrolytes, the big ones, right? Magnesium, potassium, that kind of stuff. Those are important. But I'm talking about if you're looking for copper, selenium, shellfish, eggs, milk, that kind of chocolate, that's great. So that's number one. Make sure you're eating a diet filled with minerals. So that usually includes fruit, shellfish, animal foods, protein, and stuff like that. Roots, like potatoes, are filled with, like I said, potassium, iodine, that kind of stuff. So eat a good diet filled with
minerals.
What about
dark leafy greens?
Dark leafy greens, they seem to be a good source of magnesium and calcium if they're cooked well. But other than that, I think they're not good. And if they're raw, I would definitely not eat them, especially because they're really hard to digest. And with a good thyroid function, almost any food is safe because you're digesting it great. You're producing right. digestive enzymes, you're pushing it through your stomach. But if you eat raw lettuce or raw kale and you have bad thyroid function, so you already have bad gut motility, it's sitting in your small intestine, right. you will get SIBO, for sure.
People say it all the time that they can see the lettuce and stuff in their poo. So what about greens mix powders that have these really high dense concentrated grasses? I mean, I love them. They help me with my bowel, my motility, and I feel like they help mineralize me. And I recommend it often for people who have hair loss because it seems like a quick concentrated way to get mineral balance up. And I've seen it really help, but no.
I'd say no. I wouldn't. Personally, I wouldn't recommend or take like a greens powder. And I definitely wouldn't do like a raw vegetable juice, like blending kale and spinach. I would definitely not drink that. But yeah, I'm not sure how the powders are made, but if it's probably not enough to actually cook them, especially if they're just...
No, it's not cooked. They're totally raw.
Yeah, I stay away from raw greens for sure.
Now you're talking about... So that's interesting because you're talking about like if the thyroid is functioning well, then those things are great. They're fine because you'll be able to
digest
them.
I don't think they're
them.
Great. But, I just think... Yeah.
Yeah, you know, but then ahead. Like why take them if your thyroid's functioning well? Who wants to drink that stuff?
Yeah. No, yeah. And
okay.
Yeah, so it is important to eat easily digestible food. And raw leaves are just not easily digestible, no matter what you do. And I don't even like eating cooked raw green, you know, cooked leaves and stuff. And you'll have people talking about like, oh, you know, leaves have plant defense chemicals. And we don't even have to get into all that. But I do think when you're eating plants, it's best to eat fruits and underground or ground level things like bulbs, so garlic bulb and onion, and then roots and tubers. So raw carrots are great, but everything else you should cook, like cooked potatoes, that kind of thing. I'm not a fan of leaves or stems or flowers. Broccoli's a flower.
What about
unless they're cooked, but I still don't like them.
What about herbs like cilantro and parsley and stuff like that?
Yeah, but herbs are more like a medicine and a flavor part of the food. You're not actually like eating a salad of cilantro.
I usually, used to juice kale and cilantro. I mean, cilantro and parsley together.
Yeah. Well, parsley definitely has benefits like apigenin and stuff, which is in chamomile. It's anti-estrogenic and good. But yeah, I personally would never juice raw kale and stuff, especially because okay. it has like, goitrogenic effect on the thyroid.
So we want to be consuming the animals that are eating these things because they do with like ruminants, like they create rumen, they digest it, and then they get all the benefits from those grasses and leaves. Like they end up getting the vitamin D and they end up converting all those things so that it's usable when we ingest these animal products. Is that right?
Well, yes, but also there are cases of like even sheep being fed kale and they'll get goiters and die. So
really?
Even sheep. Yeah. I remember reading maybe 4 years ago now that they tried to switch up the normal sheep or goat, you know, whatever they were eating. They tried to use kale for some reason, probably because it was cheaper at the time. And yeah, they would get goiter. So you can search up kale, sheep, mm-hmm. goiter, and you'll probably find stuff. So I'm not saying kale has no uses, but
I would
never have it unless it was cooked. And I'll quickly add this for people. Calcium is very important, and the best way is dairy, especially goat dairy or A2 dairy. And there's reasons for that, and we can talk about another time probably.
I know, but, I'm adding all these.
But okay. Having said that, I'm probably one of the few people in the world that actually can't have dairy because I have a very serious dairy allergy to dairy proteins. Most people are lactose intolerant, which can be cured with improving thyroid function because then you'll produce lactase. But that's not me. I don't have a lactose intolerant. I have a dairy allergy to the protein. So anyway, why do I say that? Well, I need to get my calcium, especially because calcium is what you need to lower parathyroid hormone. And we should talk soon about things that interfere with the conversion of T4 to T3.
Okay.
And parathyroid hormone is one of those. So my point is you need to get calcium in. Why am I talking about this now? If you truly can't have dairy, and I mean, you know, truly can't, like me, if you don't do well with cow's dairy, please try goat's milk. Try, you know, taking a lactose enzyme, improve
or
your
try thyroid. Fermenting it. Yeah, try fermenting.
Try fermenting it. Sure. Try raw milk. Some people like. But anyway, let's just say you said no. I can't do any dairy. Can't do any cheese. No milk. Nothing. So let's say you're like me. Well, you need to get calcium in. And if you don't want to supplement or eggshells. Some people blend up eggshells. But let's say you don't want to do that. The next food is kale or you know, rapini. Do you know what rapini is? Broccoli greens, I think that some people call it. Yeah, not everyone knows the word rapini, but anyway, those type of greens are the next best source of calcium, but never raw. So you either have to really, really cook. Let's just stick with kale. You have to really, really cook the kale and eat it, because you're breaking down oxalates and stuff that binds the calcium and the magnesium. Or, and Ray P talks about this, do kind of like a kale broth. So you boil the heck out of the kale and then you drink the water and it's green.
Delicious.
And it's gross, but I have to do that. But my brother is sipping goat milk all day and eating goat cheese for his calcium to lower the parathyroid hormone and all these things. But I boil kale, drink the water, and then take the kale and broil it like crazy until it's like chips and eat it.
Mm-hmm.
I probably don't have to do that last part. I could probably just drink the water, but that's what I have to succumb to get in my calcium. But I hate it and I wish I didn't have to. So if someone's eating kale and they could just have dairy, just do dairy.
Yeah.
But even me who has kale, like I said, I would never do a powder, never do a juice, never do it raw. I will either cook it like crazy and eat it, or I would boil it like crazy and drink the water. That's the only ways I would ever have kale.
Wow.
I think that's important for people to understand.
Right. Okay. Well, this is really bad news for vegans and vegetarians. So, okay. That's another episode. So let's talk about parathyroid. Parathyroid is in charge of bone metabolism, is it not?
Yeah. So this is what I'll quickly say about parathyroid hormone. When you don't have enough calcium, dietary calcium, so calcium in the diet, your parathyroid hormone will increase along with prolactin. Those are two similar hormones, and they're both heavily involved and I'd say the cause of osteoporosis. And both of them, especially prolactin, are increased by estrogen. But anyway, let's say you're me, 23-year-old guy, you don't have any calcium in your diet, let's say. You do need calcium. It has a function. So the parathyroid hormone increases to leach calcium from your stores, like so your bones. So it's just like sugar. If you don't eat carbohydrates, you will make them. You will break down your body. You will do whatever it takes. And there's lots of ways to get glucose from your body. You will make glucose if you don't have carbs. If you don't have calcium, it's that important. You will increase your parathyroid hormone, which is, you know, these glands next to the thyroid, like para, Greek, beside, and it's going to leach your bones of calcium.
And that immediately puts you in bone loss. And that could show up as carpal tunnel. It could show up as your neck always being out. It could show up as bone and joint stuff. It could show up as cracky knuckles, all kinds of stuff, right? Even old injuries worsening.
Yeah, and the main thing that people should be concerned about is actually parathyroid hormone will, I'd say, overcompensate, and then you'll have so much calcium, and you'll have calcium where it shouldn't be, especially if you don't have enough vitamin K2 in the diet, which probably no one has. And you will calcify yourself. So people say, I want to prevent calcification, so I won't eat calcium. And that's, it's they call it the calcium paradox, and I urge people to search up the calcium paradox, or just type in calcium in raypete.com in the articles and read what he's written about this. So if you don't have calcium, and or if you have too much phosphate with relation to calcium, and this is an issue because phosphate is in almost every food. It's in grains, it's in beans, it's in meat, like steak. So you cannot avoid phosphate. And it's a, Ray Pete always talks about the calcium to phosphorus ratio or phosphate ratio. So you having food in general, grains, beans, meat, if you're eating anything, you're probably getting a lot of phosphorus, especially because the fertilizers they use now are NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, right? So you need to increase that calcium. It's not all about dropping your phosphorus, but you should have more calcium than phosphorus.
But you can't just go taking it because people get kidney stones and bone spurs and all kinds of stuff like that. So that's where K2 comes into play, right?
Yeah, K2 can definitely help and reverse calcification, but the best way to prevent calcification is to keep parathyroid hormone down. So you need to consume calcium, especially in relation to phosphorus. So even if you have calcium, you have more phosphorus, you will increase parathyroid hormone. So calcium to phosphorus ratio, ideally from dairy, like goat milk or A2 cow milk. You need magnesium to keep parathyroid hormone low. So I think that's a great supplement, magnesium, unless you're, you know, it's hard to get from foods. So a supplement, just don't use oxide or citrate. Ray P talks about vitamin D. So, you know, get sun to lower parathyroid hormone. And
there are a number of,
you know what? I'm
just, okay. I didn't want to throw a trap in there for you. Yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
But I would, you know what I would say, if someone's parathyroid hormone was incredibly high, even if there was issues with vitamin D, which I'm not claiming there are, but even if there were issues, I would probably want to lower that parathyroid hormone. And if it wasn't lowering with a diet filled with calcium and supplemental magnesium and sunlight, you know, you got to lower that parathyroid hormone, especially if you're an old woman.
Or older, getting older.
Who mainly, because osteoporosis is just like Alzheimer's, is mainly a woman's disease.
But what about, we're leaving something out, which is the number one killer of women, which is heart disease. And that is a big thing with the calcium being left in the arteries and not being pushed into the bones and then calcifying, you know, and creating arterial plaque and then heart attacks and strokes.
Yeah, women get strokes more than men. Mm-hmm. And I believe men have cardiovascular heart disease more than women. And I believe the atherosclerosis, the stuff that leads to strokes and stuff, calcium is a big part of that. But if we're talking about hormones, it's, you know, estrogen, definitely. And then prolactin and parathyroid hormone. These are harmful hormones, but they're only harmful because they're trying to keep us alive with suboptimal ways, right? We need the calcium. So it's not like parathyroid. The solution isn't to remove your parathyroid hormone gland.
Right.
Your parathyroid gland, sorry. Just like the solution to high cortisol is not to remove your adrenal glands or whatever. That's not the solution. You want them there, but you don't want to have to use them. And this goes back to thyroid. When your thyroid function is functioning perfectly, optimally, you don't need the bad hormone. You don't need the emergency hormones. Definitely not as much. So for example, and I think this is important because I should have brought this up when I was talking about why you should care about thyroid function. Okay. This is definitely important for people that have high cholesterol. So this is what happens. You take T3, active thyroid, vitamin A in the form of retinol, and cholesterol. You turn this into pregnenolone, the mother of all steroid hormones. Now, a lot of people think pregnenolone is only there to, you know, be the raw material for progesterone and DHEA. But pregnenolone does a lot by itself. And young people have high levels, young healthy people have high levels of pregnenolone, DHEA, and progesterone. These are the youth associated hormones. And I highly recommend going to raypete.com articles. And he has an article literally called the youth associated hormones or youth associated steroids. I can't remember, but he talks in depth about all three. If you have a good thyroid function, you won't have high cholesterol on your on your labs. And that's why cholesterol is a great blood test to do, because if it's high, you likely are not converting T4 to T3, because you need the T3 to not lower the cholesterol, to utilize the cholesterol. Because there are things that lower cholesterol that are very harmful, like polyunsaturated fats. They lower cholesterol. Thyroid helps you use cholesterol. And taurine...
both, HDL and LDL. Helps you use both?
It helps you... yeah, well, okay, for hormone production, I'm pretty sure it's just LDL that mm-hmm. is used to make hormones. But total cholesterol is a good blood marker to get. And if it's high, you can assume... There's a few things that can cause it, like sometimes cholesterol is elevated because you have an infection or something. But if you have chronically high cholesterol, as the doctor calls it high, you probably need to be converting it to pregnenolone more. So anyway, let's say you have a good thyroid function. Your cholesterol is at a normal level. It's not high or low. You are converting the cholesterol you're producing in the liver to pregnenolone. And a lot of it's staying pregnenolone, because young kids have pregnenolone and it's good. It does good things. It's anti-inflammatory. It's a great youth-associated, youth-promoting hormone. But a lot of that pregnenolone, and let's just talk about women, will be converted to progesterone. If you're in a good place, good thyroid function, you're taking your temp and pulse and they're great, you're producing a lot of pregnenolone and you're producing a lot of progesterone and it's staying that way. If you're in a bad situation with thyroid function and you need to compensate for low thyroid with cortisol, adrenaline, aldosterone, you will turn that progesterone into cortisol. The pregnenolone will also become DHEA, which is a great hormone. It's very high in young people, youthful people. If you're in a stressed place, that DHEA will be rapidly turned to estrogen and stuff like that. So ideally, you want to be in a good thyroid function, lots of pregnenolone, normal cholesterol, lots of progesterone. And by the way, progesterone is a very unique steroid because it can take the role of basically any steroid hormone. It could take the role of aldosterone, for example. It could take on the role of cortisol, but in a good way, because cortisol and adrenaline are important, but they're really harmful. And progesterone is one of the few steroid hormones, or just hormones in general, that rebuilds the thymus gland, which is your immune system.
Really?
Cortisol and adrenaline will break it down. And George Dinkoff has a study, I think, that shows that a ratio of 8:1 progesterone DHEA supplemental will actually rebuild the thymus gland.
And the thymus gland kind of is the conductor of your immunity, isn't it?
Yeah, the white blood cells, that kind of stuff. So
wow.
And that's another reason why someone say, oh, why would thyroid help with infections? Well, thyroid helps you produce progesterone. Progesterone rebuilds the thymus. That's one potential pathway. Mm. But anyway, the point is, a really low thyroid person will have high cholesterol, will barely have any pregnenolone, and any pregnenolone they produce will rapidly become, one way or another, cortisol. Mm-hmm. And any DHEA they produce will rapidly become estrogen. And this is a bad thing. And yeah. here's a big issue. Young girls, let's just talk about women. Young girls could have really high cortisol, but also really high DHEA. Because DHEA, it will elevate in response to high cortisol, because it protects against cortisol in many ways. But the problem is, the more old you get, the more you're running on cortisol, and you're running on cortisol and adrenaline and aldosterone with low thyroid, which equals low progesterone. They're the same thing. Mm-hmm. If you're running on cortisol and adrenaline, at first, when you're 20 years old, as a female, you'll be producing lots of DHEA too. This could be a big problem, because high estrogen and PCOS will cause the adrenals to produce male hormones. So you'll have whiskers potentially with PCOS.
So you'll have like androgen issues, and then you'll have, okay. So that explains things like, acne, oily skin, maybe hair loss, the hair thinning, and polycystic ovaries, right?
But even scarier than that, so no one wants facial hair as a girl, but what's even scarier than that is you can't do that forever. At some point, after years of abuse, your adrenal gland, the section that produces DHEA, will atrophy. So you'll only be left with cortisol and no DHEA protecting you. And then you get sick and you have illnesses, and it's a really bad situation. So if you are running on cortisol and adrenaline now, that means you have low thyroid function, because without the thyroid and the associated hormones that are, you know, upregulated and produced with good metabolic rate, you will compensate for stress hormones. And that you shouldn't compensate with that for long, maybe for a week or a day in a rough, you didn't eat all day and you're doing something stressful. Sure, cortisol is great. But if you're running on them constantly, DHEA can't protect you forever. It will go away and it'll be hard to, it'll atrophy. You'll have a very, and older people have a really hard, really low levels of DHEA. And DHEA is a youth promoting thing. It's good for your skin. It's,
that's depressing.
And one quick thing about DHEA, I'm pretty sure Georgi Dinkov or Ray Pete, one of them, was saying pregnancy brain is just a low level of DHEA, I'm pretty sure. So if someone has having this pregnancy brain, sure, they feel spotty. That might be true. They might have said that, but actually they definitely said chemo brain, when you're going chemotherapy and you feel, you know, like a zombie, I guess. You know, I've never done chemo, but right. You know, I think that's a common thing people talk about, chemo brain. That for sure is a low, that's what Georgi Dinkov said. He said it's a low DHEA level in the brain.
Wow. So taking DHEA is of course an option, but especially if you have this atrophy issue, but it's just, you don't want to get there to begin with. Interesting.
Well, thyroid also prevents the DHEA from becoming what you don't want it to become, like estrogen. Mm-hmm. So if you are in a really low metabolic state, a lot of DHEA is probably a really bad idea. But DHEA in general is useful, especially for older people. If they were running a cortisol for a long time, it would be good to get your DHEA levels up, but the best way is just to get your thyroid function up.
Right.
And do you want to talk about some things that help conversion and some things that hurt it?
Yeah. And then we can also wrap up with how people can actually correctly test their thyroid. So let's start with the conversion stuff.
Sure. So like we already said in the beginning, one factor is minerals, which includes copper. So get those from fruit, shellfish, fruit, roots, that kind of stuff. So minerals, great. Another one is your liver needs enough protein. No, I don't care how much you weigh. You can weigh 92 pounds, right? The minimum range for protein is 70 to 100 grams. And without this amount, this bare minimum amount, your liver cannot detoxify estrogen enough. It can't convert T4 to T3. So you need to definitely, so getting your minerals, that's step one. Step two, get in enough protein, 70 to 100 grams minimum daily, no matter what your weight is. So that's number two. Number three is eat enough carbohydrates, especially fruit, honey, well-cooked starches like white potatoes, white rice, stuff like that. Because if you're not eating carbohydrates, and you run through your glycogen, let's say you're on a low carb diet, so you're constantly running through your stored glycogen, and you're not eating food with carbohydrate, you will make carbs. So you'll either break down protein or tissue like your thymus gland, and you'll break open amino acids, and you'll produce glucose and ammonia, which your kidneys will have to excrete. So that's hard work for the kidneys. But even more hard is if you don't give yourself glucose, other than breaking up protein and stuff and ketones, whatever, you still need glucose. Your brain, no matter what, will use at least 50% glucose, and your blood cells will always use glucose. So even if I'm fully keto, fat adapted, all the things people are saying, you still need glucose to some degree, and to a pretty large degree, to be honest with you. And ideally, things that should use glucose should use glucose. They shouldn't have to use half keto, half ketones, half glucose. So anyway, why do I say that? If you're not eating glucose, one of the ways, a main ways that you're producing glucose is gluconeogenesis from your liver. If your liver is busy using a terrible amount of energy to produce glucose for you to survive, it is not detoxifying estrogen. It's not detoxifying anything, and it's definitely not converting T4 to T3. Converting T4 to T3 only happens when you're good. So if you're starving yourself, fasting, only eating fat, not giving yourself carbs, forcing your liver to produce them, it's not going to not going to be good for your liver, and your liver definitely won't be converting T4 to T3. So now we're at minerals, protein, 70 to 100 grams, carbs. I'm not going to give a number of carbs, but, you know, that's specific, but, you know, too specific to talk about generally, but don't be on a low carb diet is what I'll say.
Right.
And then, so those are three important things. Another one is don't be super stressful in things you do. So, you know, if someone's running 5 miles a day, I do think that would be harmful. You're be running on a lot of cortisol and adrenaline, and cortisol and adrenaline are what's producing you don't have enough thyroid. And I don't think your liver will be focused on converting T4 to T3 if you're constantly running or having bad sleep, that stuff like that. So make sure you're sleeping well.
But also not just like running, but, you know, like these TRX and this CrossFit and all these HIIT training and stuff that really gets you to the point where you can't even speak, let alone breathe, or breathe, let alone speak while you're working out. And people think that that's really awesome. They feel great after doing that. But what they're putting themselves in is an unnecessary stressed mode. And your organs, including your liver, are thinking it's emergency mode, and they're not thinking in terms of just keeping you thriving. They're thinking in terms of just keeping you surviving. And then that's when things like T3 conversion falls away, digestion falls away, stuff like that. Okay. So stress management, we'll call it.
Well, yeah, stress management. So make sure you're getting enough sleep and you're not, you know, killing yourself with exercise all the time, and walking is helpful. Anything where you're still breathing through your nose, movement wise is helpful. Sunlight's helpful. But the main things are, you know, eat a nutritious diet so you're getting the minerals, like the copper as an example. You're eating enough carbs, you're eating enough protein. These are all, and you're living a good life that's not super stressful, so you're not, you know, doing CrossFit all the time. Sure. Right. Those are all things that help conversion, but it's very, very important to talk about things that inhibit conversion. So one of the main ones is polyunsaturated fats.
PUFAs,
and estrogen. Those are, and estrogen is promoted by polyunsaturated fats. So, you know, they're both terrible for the conversion of T4 to T3. So in terms of fat, go for food that's high in saturated fat or monounsaturated fat. So chocolate, you know, lamb, beef, egg, yolks, olive oil, olives, you know, all those kind of things. Okay. Stay away from polyunsaturated fats, especially, there is no place for margarine, Crisco, canola oil, soybean oil. I'm not going to say never eat nuts and seeds, but they shouldn't be staples in your diet. They should be once in a while. And definitely don't eat nut butters, because you're getting a lot of that just raw, crushed up nut with lots of
oxidized fat.
Even if the fat's not oxidized, it's still very
rancid.
High.
Yeah,
but it's still really high in those fats. So, I don't recommend ever nut butters and stuff. But if someone likes eating nuts or seeds, it's definitely legions better than margarine or something. Margarine, Crisco, terrible. They have no place in the diet. I do recommend in general staying away from nuts, seeds, beans, legumes, and cruciferous vegetables. But like I said, you don't have to completely avoid all of those things, but it's better to avoid them. But margarine and soybean oil and that stuff, that it's don't just avoid them, have none of them, zero.
Right.
But if you like sunflower seeds, you know, eat them sometime, but they shouldn't be a staple. If you like beans or chickpeas, eat them sometime, but they shouldn't be a staple. But margarine, throw it away. And so you want to keep PUFA low. You don't eat too much nuts, seeds, whatever. You want to, your fat choice should be animal foods like saturated fat and mono. Estrogen is really important to keep low, because it prevents the conversion of T4 to T3. And it's a bad cycle, because you need thyroid hormone to detoxify estrogen in the liver. And you need thyroid hormone to produce progesterone, which is our body's main, at least for women, the main defense against the harms of estrogen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really bad cycle, because if you have bad thyroid, you're bad progesterone, and then you have high estrogen. Estrogen causes bad thyroid, and bad thyroid causes bad progesterone, and it's a really, really vicious cycle.
But we should throw in here that estrogen blood labs and estrogen urine and estrogen saliva, if they're low and you're perimenopausal, you're menopausal, you don't have a uterus, or you're a man and you think your estrogen is low, that is most likely not the case. Most people have a tremendous amount of estrogen and xenoestrogen, which is estrogen mimickers from our environment and whatever, in our adipose tissues, in our breast tissue, including men, in our fat tissue, belly fat, hip fat, all of that fat carries it. And now we're starting to learn that it could be in other places, like in the brain and all kinds of places like that. So we can't assume that we're low on estrogen and not go out and blame all our symptoms on low estrogen, right?
Yeah, I would almost never assume someone has too low of estrogen. And one of the main reasons is, like you said, fat can store it in body tissue, can store it. There's also the aromatase enzyme, which is high in fat, but the aromatase enzyme is everywhere, basically. And so you can always turn other things in estrogen. And as what Dr. Ray Pete says is, especially because someone said, you know, what if this woman does need estrogen for this one thing? He said, no, never. Well, okay. I don't want to misquote him, but he basically said no, because on top of everything you said about how we can store it in the tissues and it doesn't have to be in the blood, all these things, he said, whenever there's a stress, you upregulate aromatase right away and you can produce estrogen from anything at a moment's notice. So anytime there's a little stress, you don't even have to have an ounce of fat on you. You can be a skinny person. You will produce estrogen. So idea that you need to ever take estrogen is just wrong. And if someone truly, truly, and this would be, I don't think possible, needed more estrogen, I don't see a problem with taking something like pregnenolone, which is the mother of all steroid hormones. Because if you truly needed more estrogen,
you'll convert it.
That pregnenolone will convert it.
I feel the same about progesterone. Progesterone donates to make estrogen as well. So if you take progesterone, but it only donates if you need it, like pregnenolone. It's not going to convert to estrogen if you don't need it, like DHEA might, right? Or testosterone might. So it's like, it's a safe way to try to bring balance to all the hormones for sure. I mean,
yes, and pregnenolone specifically, even if you have high estrogen, it's okay. If you have two women, they have the same levels of estrogen everywhere, body tissue, blood, whatever. But one of them has high pregnenolone, she's safe because the high pregnenolone protects against the harms of estrogen. Mm-hmm. So even if you said, oh, I'm scared to take pregnenolone because it might all become estrogen. Well, it's not all going to become estrogen, and the pregnenolone itself is protective. So anyway, that's a tangent. But
I love that tangent. Did you have any more to add to the stop PUFAs, keep estrogen low, any more of those inhibitory things?
The only addition I'll say is, because a lot of people ask me this on your Facebook group, they say, what's the meaning of that Ray Pete quote that says, a supplement of thyroid or progesterone, either one, will usually correct the issue. Well, why? Well, because if you do things to increase progesterone or decrease estrogen, so let's just say literally taking bioidentical progesterone, that progesterone will detoxify and protect against the estrogen. And that will allow your liver to convert T4 to T3. The T3 will allow you to produce more pregnenolone and progesterone. And then it's a uplifting, good cycle going up.
Because
especially progesterone is a unique steroid, similar to pregnenolone, I think is the only ones. If you take it, especially progesterone, it will promote the synthesis of more. So anyway, taking progesterone by blocking estrogen can fix a thyroid issue for women. So that's where I would start. On top of all the diet stuff and avoiding the bad things, adding in the good things, vitamin E is a great supplement because it lowers estrogen and other things. But let's say on top of all that, if you're still having a lot of trouble, a bioidentical progesterone supplement for a woman could be all you need to jumpstart it. Because again, you lower the estrogen, that allows the T4 to become T3. And now you're at a good cycle, cycle. That's sometimes all it takes. But if your thyroid is really, really bad, you might need to supplement some thyroid in the form of like a glandular, like a dried powder glandular, especially if you add that with progesterone, that would be fantastic. Because like I said, if someone has really high estrogen, even a glandular, which has some T4, T3, a lot of that T4 won't turn to T3 because of that estrogen. So I'd say progesterone alone can help. But if you add progesterone and a thyroid glandular together, that would be fantastic for women. Because like I said, one of the most harmful thing other than PUFA for the conversion of T4 to T3, other than fasting and stuff, anything that hurts your liver is estrogen. So anything to lower estrogen. So my go-to is the lower estrogen or vitamin E or progesterone. And ideally together, because progesterone should be dissolved in vitamin E.
Right. Well, we'll give your coupon code at the end of this show, but what is your coupon code for a discount for Ona's? I know you really promote Progest E by Ray Pete as well, which is amazing. And I've been using it and I dig it. But you also have a coupon code for Ona's, and what is it?
I believe it's Dean. But it's not set up yet though, so we should talk about that after. But
I think it is.
It is okay.
Yeah, so I'll put it in the show notes.
Sure, it's
so
Dean.
You can get DEAN, and you can get 10% off of any of Ona's products, plus multi discounts. If you buy three of one product, you'll get like another discount. It's crazy discount festival on Ona's website. So one thing I wanted to say before you tell us really quickly and wrap it up about how to test your thyroid. With temperature and stuff, is a quote from Ray Pete, which is PUFA, so polyunsaturated fats that we talked about, PUFA in the bloodstream activates estrogen blocking thyroid. That was directly from Ray Pete, and I thought that went along with everything you just said. So how do we test our thyroid?
Yeah, that's a great quote. They can, PUFA or estrogen by themselves can do it, but they promote each other. So they're really harmful. So the best way to test your thyroid is at home. You want to take your resting pulse rate. So you want to be sitting and you want to take how many pulses, you know, how many little beats can you count within a minute? Now it's ideal to take this 3 times a day, but if you only do it 1 time a day, it should be 40 minutes after you eat lunch. You want that number to be 75 to 85. Some people say 75 to 90. If you're hitting 100, that's too high. That's probably a stress response, like adrenaline. And if it's too low, like we talked about at the beginning, it could be acetylcholine or other things, but it should be 75 to 85/90, 40 minutes after you eat. Another good time to check it will be before you eat. So then you could compare those numbers. Before you eat, numbers, temp and pulse, aren't that useful by themselves. So ideally you would take it right before you eat, you would eat, wait 40 minutes, take it again, and you would compare them. Because ideally, assuming you're within range, the temp and pulse would go up after you eat, because it's, you have fed yourself, you're now producing energy, but it shouldn't be too hot or too high pulse out of range, because then that's a stress response. And another good time to take your temp and pulse is in the morning upon waking. So that's pulse. Temp is the same for timing, but you want it to be 36.6 to 37.2 degrees Celsius. And Dr. Ray Pete has said, you know, even up to 99 Fahrenheit is fine, but you don't want to be higher than that. So in terms of Celsius, 36.6, 37.2, if you're within that range, that's great. You should be the hottest 40 minutes after you eat. If you're, you know, 37, 40 minutes after you eat, that's a great, it's a great temperature. Take your pulse. If you're within the 75 to 85 range, then that's great. If you stay like that for, and this is important because whatever you're doing, let's say you don't want to take thyroid or progesterone or vitamin E or anything, and you just want to do it with diet. If what you're doing is working and you're right, taking your temp and pulse every day, in a month or something, you should see at least some improvement, right? Don't wait a week. But if you wait 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and you've done so much, you're eating shellfish and eggs, and you threw away all the margarine and stuff, and your pulse and temp is still really low, then it just shows that what you're doing isn't working as much. But if it is going up even a little bit, you know, even though a little bit, I'm helping.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's great. And you can do that at home, and you should do it every day. If you only do it once, like I said, 40 minutes after you eat, but if you can
for
do
how long? For how many days?
I do it every day.
You just do it to check and make sure that you're in range.
Yeah, and if you get really annoyed, again, both of these take less than a minute to do, right? The pulse is literally a minute, and then the temperature, if you're, I like the under the tongue ones or the ear ones, they take, what, 20 seconds? So it's not hard, but at least do it once a day and write it down. Because if you're in a stressful time and you see for the past week your temperature has slowly been going towards 36.6 Celsius or something, like, okay, I'm getting cold, this is bad. But anyway, I wanted to add for blood tests, it's always helpful. And when I work with people, they definitely need to take their pulse and temp and tell me this stuff so we can know what they're doing is working. But if they're willing to get a blood test, which I hope they are, it's always helpful to see the total cholesterol, because if it's high, it shows us there's an issue. And if it's really low, it's harmful to start on thyroid if you want to take thyroid glandular, because if there's not a lot of cholesterol for you to convert to pregnenolone, thyroid can be harmful. So you don't want low cholesterol, you don't want high cholesterol, but having high cholesterol is a great sign. You probably are hypometabolic, you're hypothyroid. Another one is TSH. TSH tells you nothing on its own, but when you take in symptoms like cold hands and feet, frequent headaches, bloating, that kind of stuff, constipation, and your pulse and temp and cholesterol, TSH can be helpful. But by itself, it's meaningless. And Ray, Pete, and Danny Roddy have multiple times said the T3 and T4 blood test markers are basically useless. So I don't really care about them, and I don't ask for them.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. So if you do just the four things I said, pulse, temp, daily, at the different times, total cholesterol and TSH, and symptoms, that should be more than enough. If you want to take free T3, 3T4, total T3, total T4,
reverse,
go ahead.
Okay.
Well, reverse is important. It's just very expensive, reverse T3. So a lot of people, I've never done it personally. It's, I don't know how America works, but anyway, in Canada, they don't really pass that test. But right. if you had all the money in the world and your doctor was cool, reverse T3 would be helpful. But reverse T3 is really helpful if you're taking any type of thyroid, like especially if you're on a T4. I never recommend T4 monotherapy, because you're assuming that you're taking the T4 and you're converting it to T3. But if you need T4, you're probably in a position where you're having trouble converting. So
right.
you should never take T4 alone. But if you do take T4 alone, you better be checking your reverse T3, because just so people can understand what's reverse T3. If you take T4 and your body can't turn it into T3 for many reasons, PUFA, estrogen, whatever, it will turn it into reverse T3 to actually slow down the metabolism, because the body says, whoa, we actually need to be colder and slower pulse for whatever reason. And you're giving me all this T4. No, we need to put the brakes on. So they put reverse T3, which is the opposite of T3. It slows everything down. So reverse T3 ideally should be non-existent, I guess.
Wow, but that's interesting, because a lot of, yeah. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
And I'll just add, one last thing. This isn't that relevant to thyroid, but if you're getting a blood test, it's always helpful to get PTH, which is parathyroid hormone, and prolactin. Usually one of them will be high. If they're high, you want them both low, because if they're high and you're not like breastfeeding for prolactin, then you probably have high estrogen and there's going to be some issues. They're good numbers to see, but they're not that relevant to thyroid. But if parathyroid's high or prolactin, you'll have trouble with your thyroid too. So they're helpful.
They're good to know. Okay. Okay, cool. So you are coaching people and you've been doing awesome and people love you and they can just look in the show notes. Do you want to give your email here? I know it's kind of, your name is.
Yeah, I spell it like that would be like C-O-N. So it's Constantine.Canargelitis@rogers.com. So I'll just quickly say I either do email correspondence with people for 30 days, or you can pay for an hour-long Zoom call with a discount if you do before. And I'll say a lot of people will either start with the emails and they'll feel, okay, I want to start talking about some important stuff too. And a lot of people, well, a few people, usually people start with the emails, but a few people have started with a video interview call for an hour. They get a lot of their questions answered. And then a couple of days they say, you know what, can we do the emails too? So, whatever you want and whatever you like. And yeah, and that's all through Constantine.Canargelitis@rogers.com. We'll put that email in the show notes. And if you don't find me there, then if you're part of Kitty's Facebook group, I'm around there. I'm a moderator. So those are the two places to find me, the email and the Facebook group.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you so much. That was really fun. And I'm definitely, we're going to do the PUFA thing or some, I don't know. I have a whole list of our next shows. So this is awesome. And we'll put all the links of all the different things you talked about in the show notes as well. So
awesome.
Thank you. so much fun, right? I really, really love Constantine. He's my new BFF. And if you want to work with him, all his information, by the way, I'm working with him right now. We are working on my thyroid together, and maybe you should join me. It's something I've never done, and I think it's just another level of upgrade for your health. You know, I think it's really wise to do it. It's challenging though, because my ranges were, my vitals were in range when we began. And he was saying, yeah, because, you know, you've been living on adrenaline for the last 52 years. So they keep you in that range, but it's not a healthy range. It's not a healthy place to be when you're running on adrenaline like that, which I was. You can't live on adrenaline. You just can't. It's eventually going to catch up with you. And I have always been on adrenaline. And, you know, you think of a person who's running on adrenaline as someone like me, right? Like high level energy, you know, chihuahua on crack. And that's not always the case. And I know I mentioned this already, but, you know, Dr. Charlie, who those of you who know him, he's the most chill, the most even keel dude. He never, ever loses his temper ever. And that's because he goes to jujitsu and chokes everybody out. he takes it all out in other ways. I'm just kidding. Sort of, but not really. So he, you know, people can be completely, you could even think that they are hyperthyroid, and they can still be hypothyroid. You know, you like, for example, well, let me go back to Charlie. So he was a certain way his whole life, his entire life. He just really is even keel, keeps his temper managed, holds things in. But that doesn't mean he isn't having this same adrenaline issue. And which brings me to what I was just going to say. We think hypothyroid. We don't think energy, high energy. We don't think adrenaline. We think people who have slow and low metabolism, and they're slow and low in their behavior, and maybe they're inactive, maybe they don't exercise, and maybe they're obese or they're very overweight. That's what we generally think of when we think hypothyroid. And I think that is certainly a version, and maybe an advanced version of that. Like if Charlie kept going in this direction, and you know, you have an injury or you get older and it slows you down, and then that other metabolic stuff catches up to you where you gain weight and now you can't get off the sofa and you need a wheelchair, et cetera, and you're in your 60s and 70s and you're having all of these non-communicable diseases all of a sudden, right? So it's an advanced form of exactly where Charlie is and where I am, which is we are managing really well, but we're also operating on adrenaline. And I would guarantee, I would venture to say most people are that way. Whether you think you have your, you know, your thyroid managed, you probably don't if you're dealing with some health challenges. So anyway, it's just super interesting. If you're a nerd like me when it comes to health and you want to just keep digging for the truth, you know, it's fascinating stuff to check it out. And when you also get older, you start to see things sort of, I don't want to say breaking down, but changing. You're like, wait, does that have to be that way? Can I fix that somehow? Like, do I have to keep waking up throughout the night to go to the bathroom, or is this fixable? You know, do I have to have these arthritic bouts? Although, you know, I think as you age, some of it is just going to be there. But, you know, do I have to have these certain things? And you just start to pick at it and ask questions. And I think that a lot of it is preventable. I really do. So anyway, check out his info. He's really, really affordable. So, and I don't think it's going to always be that way. He's already getting a whole slew of clients from my group, and they're loving it. And he's getting testimonials already of how, you know, the changes he's making in people's lives. So get it while you can is all I'm saying. And don't forget his coupon code for ONAS, which is D as in dog, E as in Edward, A as in apple, N as in Nancy, Dean. And get 10% off your order. And yeah, that's it. Check out my new shop page on my website. It is healthygutgirl.com. Click on the shop page and we will see you soon. Yay!